Greetings and welcome to the special late night edition of the Big Deep Podcast. Before I announce tonight's special guest, please subscribe to the Spunky Spectrum Sports YouTube page where, you know, it's April and that means all kinds of NFL draft coverage. We have got I've got an NFL draft junkie on the podcast next week, so feel free to tune back in. And you never know what to expect. There may be Olympians, there may be draft gurus, or there may be an NFL agent. And speaking of NFL agents, we've got one tonight from Colorado Springs, from 36 Sports Rep, Craig Doman is in the house. Craig, did I pronounce your last name?
You got it right, Dylan. Thank you, man. We're good.
Craig and his wife, Teddy, run a 36 Sports Rep from Colorado Springs. How long have you been doing that?
A long time, my man. I've been in the player representation business for 3 decades now.
Could you describe the process of somebody becoming an agent? Because is it different than like becoming a lawyer, or is the process any different becoming a lawyer compared to an agent?
Well, here's the two prerequisites for becoming a sports agent, at least with NFLPA. Number one, you have to have a graduate degree. Doesn't matter what it is, law degree, master's in something. Could be a master's in music, it doesn't matter. They just want you to have a grad degree. It's a way for them to kind of wean out people and make people have to go to school longer because they don't want too many people doing what we do. And then the second requirement is you've got to pass the agent exam, which they've made it a lot tougher the last 10 years, a lot more meaningful, a lot more relevant. I've been on the question board a few times where you kind of assist the NFLPA with identifying what questions should be on the test. And the test is very passable, but it's something that it's another way to filter out people so that it's not a free for all and you don't have, you know, 20,000 people registered as agents.
Would it be like the housing equivalent of the bar? How passable is it? Could somebody like me pass it?
Oh yeah.
Would it be like the equivalent of the Wunderlich test?
No, it'd be a lot harder than the Wunderlich test. Wunderlich test is like 52 questions and a lot of it's common sense and a little bit of low-level mathematics and algebra and whatnot. The agent exam actually requires you to be familiar with the CBA, understand how to calculate the cap consequences of a contract depending on what the components of the contract may be, guarantees and whatnot. So it's not as hard as the bar. It's not as hard as the CPA exam. It's in between.
Okay, so why did you become a sports agent?
Well, I think why I became a sports agent and what ultimately I saw as my purpose as a sports agent are two different things. I got into being a sports agent because back when I was getting out of law school, there's really two options to be in sports. One was go into athletic administration and aspire to be an AD, or two is go represent the players. And back then, my wife was associated with the McDonald's All-American High School basketball game. I met Shaquille O'Neal when he was 17, Grant Hill when he was 18, and did White House tours and different things with these guys. And I'm like, these guys can really benefit from having somebody be a mentor, guidance counselor, advisor, all those kind of roles that agents wear. And so that's the angle that I took. And so that's the purpose that I had back when I did it. And then as I've done it for so many years, what I've really learned is that it's about helping guys achieve their dreams and helping them understand what's coming around the corner because they don't have the perspective to see what's really coming around the corner. And everybody's career is terminal. And unless you have a guaranteed contract, every contract's a one-day contract. And almost every player, I know Edelman walked away because of injuries, but most players don't see it coming. it always comes before the last day, their last team always comes before they see it coming. So I see my role is to help them navigate through that journey, help them see the things that they can't see themselves, so that when the show's over, they have some money in the bank, they have good health, they have hopefully good relationships with guys they played with and coaches they played for, and they've used the platform as an NFL player to capitalize on opportunities outside of football, so that when they're done, they have gainful employment, sponsorship, whatever it may be, opportunities that they wouldn't have had but for the fact they were an NFL player.
So what makes a good NFL agent?
I think there's a multitude of traits that you have to be a great agent. One is that you have to earn the trust of your clients, so much so that you can tell them the truth so that they can make the best decisions. And at the end of the day, the players make all their own decisions. You don't make decisions for your clients, but you frame the decisions for your clients, and you can have a tremendous influence in guiding them in the right direction or the wrong direction. And most of the time when agents guide their clients in the wrong direction, it's never intended. It's never purposeful. It's usually the unintended consequences of not telling your client the truth, not taking into consideration all the facts and circumstances related to the market. You're cherry picking what you're seeing in the market. If you cherry pick what you're seeing in the market, you're not giving your client the best advice. And it's very similar to being a financial advisor. Let's say a particular stock in a certain sector is just blowing up. Let's say it's cryptocurrency or something like that. And you tell your client as a financial advisor to put all their money into cryptocurrency. You put it in Ethereum, you can put it in Bitcoin, you can put it in different things. And then all of a sudden that market, the bottom falls out and they didn't have any other, you know, diversity or, you know, any other way to like limit their losses. You did a bad job for your client as a financial advisor. You can do the same thing as an agent by not taking into consideration all the variables and all the everything that's going on out there in the league.
So obviously we all get advice from somebody, whether it be a friend or relative, coworker, professor. What's the best bit of advice somebody gave you?
That's a great question. You know what? I think a lot of it is your identity. You've got to know who you are, what you stand for, what your purpose is, those type of things. It's not what you do, it's who you are. I actually got that advice from a client 20 years ago. He was speaking to a men's group, over 1,000 men. And he was talking about how football is what he does, not who he is. And that really resonated in my mind. That applies to me too.
It's interesting that that advice from 20, 25, 30 years ago sticks with us even today.
No question.
So could you talk a little bit about 360 Sports Rep?
Absolutely. So 360 Sports, we focus in really three areas. One is representing players. The second one is representing coaches. And the third thing that we do is we do some events. And so we have a charity arm that we have that's called Pro Football Camp. So those are our three main areas. And with respect to the players, since I've been doing it a long time, I would say that I spend a lot of my time on the player side working with ex-players, guys that are retired, that have become coaches, become fathers and have families, and they're doing other things. So I try to do a really good job of staying in touch with my old guys too. And then with coaches, the biggest thing with coaches is you want them to get the best opportunities they can get, but you got to continually remind them that they need to focus on the job they have, not the job they want. And most coaches are thinking about the job they want versus the one they have.
Interesting. So have your ideas with 360 Sports Rep exceeding your own expectations?
That's a great question. I would say that it's the relationships that you get an opportunity to develop through this industry. And I would say that it's the real impact you get to make on the clients that become your friends and become your colleagues and mentees and things of that nature. I think when you first get in the business, you don't really comprehend or even recognize the opportunity to make a real impact on a young man. But when you look back, that is really the value of what we do. And that's where I feel like with 360 Sports, it's been the most satisfying, is just making impacts on people.
Speaking of impact, how about a few of your clients? Giant tackle David Deal won a couple Super Bowls protecting Eli Manning's blind side. Rob Ninkovich won multiple Super Bowls with the Patriots, and Mike Minter played in one for the Panthers.
Yeah, I had a bunch of guys playing the Super Bowls, a bunch of guys that played more than 10 years in the league. What I really like about my guys that played for a decade, it wasn't just their athleticism and their ability that allowed them to play for a decade. It was their mindset, their commitment, their dedication. They had these perspectives that, hey, I'm all in. Some of them ate, slept, drank everything else, football, some didn't, but they all had this extra it factor. Because to play in the NFL every single year, like what's happening here in a couple weeks, the draft, well, everybody's excited about the new guys. Everybody's excited about the new face of the franchise that's coming in. What people don't think about is the dude that's going to lose his job because of the guys that get drafted this month. And so it really is a one day at a time, one year at a time type career. And every single year, you get to go through the draft one time as an eligible player. But you go through the draft every single year of your career after that, looking over your shoulder to see if they're trying to replace you. So I'll never forget one of my clients. He's now a coach in the NFL, Chris Cooper. He was an offensive lineman that played for 8-9 years for the Broncos. He was at a draft party for the Broncos, and he was there with the quarterback from Purdue. God, who was the quarterback for the Broncos? Kyle Orton.
Wow, Kyle Orton.
Kyle Orton. They went to this draft party together, and they drafted a receiver in the first round. And so Kyle was excited, Chris was excited, and then they were leaving. It was late in the first round, they were leaving the party, and they just got outside the door, and there's this huge roar of fans going ape, crazy. And so they went back in to find out that the Broncos traded up in the first round to draft Tim Tebow.
Oh, no.
So that kind of stuff happens every single year. Every year. So, the quarterbacks in Jacksonville, your hometown and your team, they know Trevor Lawrence is coming to town. That talk's been going on for 2 years. But there's going to be, just like Aaron Rodgers last year, wasn't really excited about the Packers' first round pick. So that's the thing about the draft, is it has a dark side too, which is all the guys that are adversely affected by the team's draft pick that just so happens to play their position.
I hate to be Gardner Minshew right now, because his days as Jacksonville's starting quarterback are numbered.
I would say they're already over.
Yeah. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when one starts. Has there been a favorite player you've represented the past, whether it be current or past?
You know what? That's a tricky question. I've had several. But I think the thing that I would say is that, one of my clients from eons ago was a gentleman by the name of Brock Gutierrez. He played offensive line. He came out of Central Michigan. He put together a 10-year career in the NFL and started like less than 30 games. And he just had, he was that dude that outplayed his abilities. He's that dude that just was like a coach on the field that they couldn't get rid of, but they wanted to get rid of. And he played for 10 years. I ended up naming my last son after him and named him Brock because I loved what Brock Gutierrez stood for, because he was tough, he was smart. He just had that it factor that allowed him to keep a job, stay in the league, build a career, even though he didn't have the prototypical measurables that teams look for in his position. He was an offensive guard, offensive center. So I really don't have a favorite, but that just goes to show, you know, the impact and the impression a client can have on you, that you love the way he goes about his business, that you would actually name your kid after
him. Now, unlike other sports like MLB, the NHL, NBA, NFL rarely, and I mean rarely, gives fully guaranteed contracts. Could you talk about some difficult contracts you got for a client?
Well, I can honestly say I've never had a fully guaranteed contract for a client ever. You know, especially for a veteran, that's very difficult to do. Teams want outs. They want the opportunity at some point in time, if the player doesn't outperform his contract, they want to be able to cut ties. If the team doesn't win and they bring in a new GM or a new head coach that wants his own people, they want a chance to be able to cut ties with that guy and not be obligated with dead money with respect to guarantees. They're going to be obligated with dead money, period, but not necessarily money they got to pay out. That, who wants to pay somebody that's not working, right? But as far as contracts, I would say that none of them were hard. They were just different. And I think the biggest negotiation that you have with the NFL is with your clients, not with the teams. So think about this for a second, Dylan. You're talking to a team and your client thinks he's worth five a year or 10 a year, it doesn't matter. And the team, you get the team above that, that's easy. That's easy. You call your guy up and you go, bro, man, we're good. You know, we got 11.5 on the table per year. That's not a difficult negotiation. It might be a battle with the team, but that's part of your job. That's fun. The most difficult negotiation is when your client is thinking X and the team won't go to X. And you got to be the one that helps your client understand that X minus is better than going somewhere else. Because if it's better to go somewhere else than to sign for less than X, that's not a hard negotiation because you just jump ship. It's when you're in that situation where you canvass the league and you find out that the team your client's on likes him better than anybody else, and yet the team he's on doesn't want to pay him what he thinks he's worth.
Yeah, that can be a tricky situation, especially because what if a team likes the player, but you could find a wide receiver in the second or third round who's 90% as good?
Might be better.
And you get the draft pick back if he signs a deal with X team.
Yeah, you get the compensatory pick.
So speaking of draft picks, every year teams try and find the next Tom Brady and avoid the Ryan Leaf draft bust. So what's the difference between a first round draft pick who busts or someone who plays 10 or more years in the NFL?
Well, I think I'm gonna rephrase that question, Dylan. I think the question is, I would ask this question: what are the reasons why a player busts that gets drafted in the first round? That over a year period, when he's being evaluated by all 32 teams, generally a team doesn't take a guy in the first round that other teams don't think is the first rounder. I mean, it happens every now and then, where you'll see like, hey, the 21st pick, the Raiders, typically it's the Raiders. They take a guy And everybody else is scratching their head like, we didn't even have that guy in the first three or four rounds. But as a general rule, everybody that gets drafted in the first round is graded as a first rounder almost on a consensus basis across the league. So the question is, why do those guys bust? And then the reciprocal question is, with all the money and resources and the scouting talent out there and the processes and the video review and the school visits and the all-star games, the combine, the pro days, I could go on and on and on. Do some guys not get picked by anybody? And teams pass over them theoretically eight times because we have eight rounds in the draft because we have 32 compensatory picks. Do some of those guys play for 10 years? Is that a good way to frame it? So you want the magic number, you want the magic answer that every NFL team would pay billions of dollars for?
Yeah.
It's their mindset. It really is, because what a team can't measure is how a player, they can't measure his identity. And a player can't play above his identity. They can't measure his motivation. If a guy's motivation is buy mama a house, well, once he's in the first round, he can buy his mama and his brother and sister and everybody a house, and he's not motivated anymore, so he doesn't even get it. They don't exercise his option, and he doesn't get a second deal because he was satisfied with the first round contract because he had enough to buy his mama a house. And so when you look at mindset, when players don't have identity, they don't have passion, they don't have motivation, they're not hard workers, they have poor power patterns, meaning they feel entitled, they do things off the field because now I'm a pro, I should be able to cut lines, get free meals, get discounts on cars, whatever the case may be. They think they're special when they're not in the locker room, when they're not on TV, when they're not on the field, but they're just a normal Joe, but they don't think they are. So then they struggle in society. And then you've got guys that do all the right things. They love the game. They got strong confidence. They've got excellent motivation, which Tom Brady obviously does, or he wouldn't still be playing. But they don't know how to be combat ready on Sundays or Monday nights or whatever their games are. And they can't make plays, and they're not money players. Well, then they do all the right things, but they do it in practice. They can't do it in the games. They're going to be a bust. So I have a podcast called Pro Mindset, and I talk about the seven elements that are in a Pro Mindset playbook. And if you've got those in spades, it doesn't matter what round you get drafted in. And if you don't have those, and you identify them, or someone else helps you identify what you're missing, and you don't go get filled up or increase that weakness, there is no way you can be a superstar. So everybody that puts on a gold jacket, they don't put them in there by 40 times. They don't put them in there by combine results. They put them in there for performance on the field. And every single dude that's in Canton, Ohio has a stellar mindset.
Yeah, I mean, thinking back, Jerry Rice's 40 times, what, 4.58, 4.59? And yet, nobody could cover him. Nobody could cover him. I mean, Tom Brady, I think you and I ran faster than Tom Brady's 40-yard time, yet he's still kicking.
Anquan Boldin ran a 4.9.
Anquan Boldin ran a 4.9?
Ran a 4.9 in Indy.
You're kidding. And his first game he caught over 200 yards of...
I think he went to the Pro Bowl his rookie year. He was amazing.
And he's a borderline Hall of Fame receiver. Borderline Hall of Fame receiver. That's unbelievable.
I know. So I've had guys that have gone to the combine that haven't ran well. I've had guys tear it up. But it's like, it's not, so this is the myth or the misnomer about the draft. is everybody thinks the finish line for their career is on draft weekend. Where did you get drafted? And the media runs with it, the fans run with it. Coaches don't care. If you're a third rounder, fifth rounder, eighth rounder, no rounder, they don't care. If you're a first rounder, then show us. And I think what players think is I've arrived because I got drafted. That's not true. So the word commencement, I learned this a long time ago when I graduated from high school. When you have that commencement ceremony, I thought it was we accomplished something. Well, commencement is quite the opposite. It means the beginning. The draft should be called the NFL commencement because it's the beginning. It's your starting point. All it does is affect your bank account. That's it. It doesn't determine whether or not you're going to be a good player. So like, let's say, for example, we go 1, 2, 3, 4 this year, which would be unprecedented at the quarterback position. I'll bet every penny I got, two of those guys are going to be busts. We just don't know which two. And for your sake and Urban Meyer's sake and the city of Jacksonville's sake, I hope it's not Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor could bust. He doesn't seem like he would. His pedigree, you know, his success at Clemson. Has he lost like 2 games at Clemson or something like that?
2 games and both of them were at the Louisiana Superdome. Just get him out of the NFC South.
Yeah, just don't go, hey, just be a healthy scratch every time you play New Orleans in New Orleans.
although things will be different now that Drew Brees has retired.
Well, we don't know because the culture down there is amazing. Sean Payton's gonna, it may not take them long to basically reset.
So speaking of quarterbacks, how do you feel about these quarterbacks? I mean, obviously, Trevor Lawrence is going 1 and 2. Zach Wilson's probably going 2. And then your guess is probably better than mine on the other three. So what do you think about these quarterbacks?
I think they all have a chance. They all have a chance. I think, let's just take Trevor first. Trevor's success is going to be predicated upon a little bit about expectations. You know, if Jacksonville's thinking they're going to win 13 games his rookie year, he can't do it. He can't do it by himself. So expectations are going to be one of his kryptonites, okay? The second thing that's going to hurt him potentially is his supporting cast. No quarterback can do it by themselves. You know, it'd be really cool if he could throw the ball and then run downfield and catch it, but he's not going to be able to do that. So how good is his, you know, protection? How good is his receivers? And then candidly, if the offense is jamming and they have a, you know, a porous defense, they're still not going to win games. So it's the total 53, it's the all 22. How good can they make the offense, the defense, and the special teams, not just the quarterback? So I think Trevor, love him, loved what he's done, love his personality, love his success. He looks the part, he's got the prototypical size, he's got the arm talent. He really doesn't show any holes yet. But once he faces a level of adversity that he's never faced at Clemson, once he has a fan base and maybe perhaps the whole NFL going, yeah, we knew he couldn't do it. How's he gonna respond? It's like the Mike Tyson quote. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. What's Trevor Lawrence gonna do when he gets punched in the face? The next thing is, what if Trevor has a tremendous amount of success? Let's say they win 10 games at rookie year. Does it go to his head? Does he still work hard? Because one thing that happens in the NFL, whether a quarterback starts his rookie year or sometime later in his career, after his first year starting in the league, that's when the other teams go to school. That's when everybody goes and breaks him down and picks him apart and figures out what his weaknesses are, what he doesn't do well, what situations, what routes, what everything, what coverages he struggled with, And guess what he's going to get his year two?
Whole bunch of exotic defenses he never saw his rookie year.
Bingo.
I mean, look at what Baker Mayfield did 2 years ago. He looked like a completely different quarterback from year one to year two in a bad way.
Happens all the time. So when that happens, because it's going to happen, how's Trevor going to respond to that? Okay. And so what I'm talking about with Trevor Lawrence applies to all the guys, but it's to be continued. We don't know. On draft day, we don't know. So the question is, did the Jaguars even have a choice? No. If Urban Meyer, in his interviews with ownership, would have said, well, we got to evaluate the quarterbacks, he wouldn't be the coach.
There would be somebody else coaching. Urban would be playing golf somewhere.
So Trevor Lawrence has been so good for so long that the Jags didn't have a choice. The real question is, if they did have a choice, would they still take Trevor Lawrence? We'll never know, because they're probably going to take, there's 100% chance of taking Trevor Lawrence. Okay. They can't not take him, because if they didn't take him, let's say they took Justin Fields or one of the Zach or one of the other guys, and Trevor ends up being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh gosh.
Right? People will go dig up Urban Meyer's grave, right? So they have to take him, but the unfairness in this whole thing is they didn't have a choice. And so what they have to do with Trevor is develop him. So the draft is about identifying who you want. Once you get him in the building, then it's about development. And I have confidence in Urban Meyer. I love what he stands for. I love his mindset. I love his approach. I love his pedigree. He's had a history. It didn't matter where he was, Utah, Bowling Green, Florida, Ohio State. The dude knows how to freaking win. He knows how to build winners, bring in winners. He knows how to get the best out of guys. So I have a lot of confidence in the pivot that's going on down there. But I'm telling you, if they don't have a developmental plan for Trevor Lawrence, for helping him overcome the adversities that are coming right down the pipeline, you guys are going to be drafting another quarterback in 3 or 4 years.
That's no bueno. That's no bueno. I've already got Trevor Lawrence for the next 15 years. I don't want to be drafting a quarterback in 2024. I'm like, I've got Urban Meyer. Yeah, we've got Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence for my team. I don't need anybody else coaching or quarterbacking.
Well, let me jump to a couple of the other guys. Mac Jones.
Oh, gosh. What is going on with Mac Jones? Like, I've never seen, I mean, Mac Jones wasn't even on anybody's draft board, and now he might go number 3.
I know. So here's the thing. If he goes to, let's say, he goes to San Francisco. San Francisco gets healthy, which they're doing on defense. They've got a stellar defense. Mac Jones can't be any worse than Garoppolo. Okay, so if Mac Jones knows how to use weapons, which he did have weapons in Alabama, he's gonna be okay, but the thing with him is gonna be speed of the game. Can he make the throws? Can he make good decisions? Can he make pre-snap reads? Can he recognize, using your words, the exotic blitzes that teams are going to throw at rooks? And if the answer is yes, that guy's going to be fine. We don't know. It's to be continued. How fast can they develop him so that he can make teams pay every time they blitz? And Justin Fields. I love Justin Fields. Done it for more, he's got more miles on his tires than Mac Jones. I see Mac Jones and Zach Wilson very similarly. They were awesome in COVID 20. They were awesome. But where were they 3 years ago? Sitting on the bench. So they really haven't shown us who they are. And so the teams have the due diligence of projections. And when you project, a lot of times you're wrong. And so I think the bust factor is higher with Mac and with Zach than it is with Trevor and Justin. And Trey Lance, bust factor is high, very high. He could be Superman. He could make Patrick Mahomes look like a slappy. But he also is more likely to be a bust.
Could part of the problem be with Justin Fields is that because people saw him play so much in Ohio State, and the two games people look at this year, Indiana and Northwestern, when Justin Fields was fall from himself, what people don't realize that Indiana's defense was really good, Northwestern's defense is really good, and Fields went into that game without his number one receiver, a great offensive line, and he wasn't 100%. That was a hand injury, I think a finger injury. But yet, in the Sugar Bowl against Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields played the best game of his college career.
Well, that begs the question, which games do you count? What do you put the most emphasis on? How good he could be based upon his best game, or how bad he could be based upon his bad games? And I think you have to take the totality of the plays and you have to look at them all. But I watched the Northwestern game. It was one of those games where he didn't do anything, but eventually they turned it on. I feel like they were overconfident. They were flat. And this was a Super Bowl for Northwestern. So I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm just saying I'm throwing that one out. I'm throwing that one out. I think Trevor Lawrence is... I think Justin Fields is very solid. I love the fact that he transitioned from Georgia, seamlessly moved into Columbus, took over, was better than Dwayne Haskins from the jump. He's multidimensional. He's a better athlete. I think he's a better leader. But when Dwayne Haskins came out, probably wouldn't have been a first-round pick if everybody thought he was going to be a bust.
And be honest, I'm not sure Dwayne Haskins was mentally or physically mature for the NFL. I mean, because he basically played one great year, and then Washington drafted him in the middle of the first round, and well, and
hold on, Dylan. What's the difference between what you just said? Were you talking about Mac Jones?
Or no, Haskins.
But weren't you also talking about Mac Jones and Zach Wilson?
Yeah. I also forgot that he played with four first-round wide receivers, probably college football's best running back, and a couple of good NFL linemen.
Yeah. So I really feel like even if a team is wrong on one of these guys, if they have a great development plan and they don't put the guy in too soon, and they give him a chance to catch up to the speed of the game mentally more than physically. And I'm sure at Alabama, their Joes were better than the other Joes most of the time. Or in the NFL, that's not going to be the case. You know, how ready are these four quarterbacks, or five? These all five of them. How ready are they to hit the ground running wherever they land, to absorb the playbook, earn the trust of their coach, develop chemistry with the receivers, and learn how to protect themselves from the crazy blitzes that NFL D coordinators have? And whatever that answer is will tell me automatically who's the right guy and who's the best guy. We haven't got there yet.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the Niners do at three, because if the Niners take Mac Jones, I mean, you imagine Kyle Shanahan, what he could do. And yes, I think San Francisco is actually probably the best quarterback spot, because you look at that team, if they stay healthy, you've got Trent Williams, left tackle, Raheem Mostert, tailback, George Kittle, D Debo Samuel, who's the other young tight end? Brandon Ayuk. With that pass rush, I mean, the Niners could be back in the Super Bowl hunt.
Absolutely. So what's going to happen on draft weekend when San Francisco trades down? Nobody sees that coming.
Why would the 49ers trade up and trade back? That makes sense, right?
Well, my point is they probably won't, but it would be really funny if they did.
It'd be funny if they trade with, like, the Eagles. Like, the Eagles got all the draft picks and the Dolphin trade and decide, oh, we're going to take Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones for ourselves. So, sorry, Jalen Hurts, but we're drafting your replacement.
Well, I could see Atlanta moving up. If it's probably a mood issue now because, you know, San Francisco would look like a fool if they put out there, hey, we're thinking about, we're contemplating moving down a couple spots because we know who we want is going to be available. But it's a game of poker on draft weekend. I just feel like there's such a premium on quarterbacks these days that teams are drafting them so high, and 50% of them are going to be miserably disappointed sometime in the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's almost like a quarterback game of cat and mouse. You want the right quarterback with the right scheme, coach, and players around him to help succeed. Otherwise, you're going to be the New York Jets looking for a quarterback every 2-3 years, seemingly.
Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see what Sam Darnold does in Carolina.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, I think he'll be good there. You've got C-Mac, DJ Moore, and Robbie Anderson. Maybe Sam Darnold, Robbie Anderson 2.0 will work in Charlotte, right?
You never know.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what happens in Cleveland. And thank you for hopping on the podcast. And we'll see what the quarterback musical chair stops on.
Before you kick me out, I want to say a prayer over you and your organization that Trevor Lawrence is not a bust.
Oh, gosh.
Good luck, dude.
Otherwise, you're going to hear from me. Thank you.
All right, man. Have a great night.